Affairs to order. Today's Tuesday, February 12, 2008. This is an informational meeting today. Some of the members of the committee thought they might be a little late. They're going to try to be here, but I don't want to take advantage of the people who are here for their time, so we'll get started. And I'd like to call General Caldwell and Mr. Evans up first.
Mr. Chairman and almost members of the committee and Mr. Taylor, I think today is a good opportunity not only for committee and the staff, but particularly the people that are either watching on the web or folks that are going to come into the room to really kind of get a feeling for some of the issues that confronted us when we started deploying soldiers at a very high rate 4.5 years ago. And one of those, one of the major issues, and you'll hear from the panels as we wrap up here, and they'll be able to tell you more specifically the importance and the assistance that we've been able to get from the Oregon Bar Association. Without it, I can tell you that there's a lot of men and women out there, family members, soldiers, and the like, that would have been in very difficult state without being able to get proper legal advice. Simply put, we were not organized, nor were we manned at the military department in the Oregon Guard to take care of the multitude of issues that come up, as one would have that ability on an active duty post where you've got a fairly good bunch of lawyers, JAG officers that are available for families and other issues. As you well know, we don't have that active duty post here in this state. We don't have those kind of resources, so we were caught short and not able to particularly deal with everything we needed to deal with. And the Oregon Bar stepped up. Basically, we didn't ask. They came to our aid and said, we think you're going to need some help, and we're willing to set up a program where we can do this help, and we'll do it free, pro bono, to help these men and women and their families who really need the assistance. So as a prelude to what you're going to hear as we get moving here, I think it's our great benefit. We feel extremely grateful for the effort that these men and women have done throughout the state of Oregon in some of the strangest, oddest cases that you can imagine. Give you, I guess, an example of what we have available full-time at the Oregon Military Department right now. When the war started, we had one full-time JAG officer. And that person's real responsibility was to make sure that not only we deal with the legal issues that come by our way through the chain of command, but more importantly, to ensure that each soldier, as they prepared to deploy, had the proper legal documents, particularly a will, powers of attorneys, and those sort of things, so they were not completely left in the wind as they deployed and were gone for 18 to 24 months in some cases. So that was their primary function. Now, we've increased the size of the office to two full-time people. We're and a clerk, and we're about ready to add a third one. And still, the workload is immense. It's just incredible how big the workload is, and I'm sure that you can appreciate that from the multitude of number of soldiers that we've put on active duty. The other thing I think is important to note is that these folks in the Oregon Bar have not only helped the Oregon Guard, but they've helped all services, reservists, active duty members whose families are here in Oregon. And I think it's just been a real benefit and a blessing to these men and women, and we're very, very thankful. So with that, I'll let Mr. Evans talk and then answer any questions you may have.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, again, for the record, Paul Evans from the Governor's Office. My message is very brief on this, just to say thank you for all the folks that are making this happen. And as a person who was deployed, knowing that these services can help the families and can take care of things at home when you're abroad really does make a significant difference. Yesterday, a lot of discussion about the reintegration program and successes there. This is one of the programs that is one of those support efforts that, again, as the general talked about, no one really envisioned the need for necessarily at the beginning of this, but is proving itself. And it's proving itself by the willingness of people to volunteer time, expertise, and the Oregon Bar making this happen. So I just want to say thank you.
Thank you. Jerry Gatos and Ann Fisher. And if you just would identify yourself for the record when you start talking.
Good afternoon or early evening, Chairman Barker and Mr. Taylor. For the record, my name is Ann Fisher, and I'm here on behalf of the Oregon State Bar. Thank you for the opportunity to tell you a little bit about what the bar does. I'm not going to read our testimony. You probably can read better than I can, so I'll just try to summarize parts of it. I do want to tell you how proud I am of the bar because, as you've already heard, we take on things that we see need to be done. And in this case, it's an access to justice and how to help military and others have an opportunity in the judicial system that they might not otherwise have. The bar is a creature of statute. We have an elected board of which I am proud to say I am a member. There are 13,000 plus members currently for our bar, and we're the only state in the United States that have a mandatory malpractice insurance program. So we do try to take care of the public. In a few moments, you'll hear about some of the issues that the practitioners have faced, but I'll tell you a little bit about some of the pro bono services we provide. First, on the bar website itself, there is indications on the site on how to find out more information about various legal services that are available to the public. It's an easy site to work, so people can find out if they have a problem and get simple questions answered. It doesn't provide legal information, but it does provide a start for people thinking. We have the Military Assistance Panel. It's part of our free or pro bono services. As a matter of aspirational standard, the bar has adopted that a policy that each person provide 80 hours of uncompensated service for the public good each year. And of that, 20 to 40 hours should be in service to the poor without expectation of payment. In 2006, 1,784 bar members reported providing over 100,000 hours of pro bono services. And reporting is voluntary, so I suspect that number is rather understated. I myself have provided 300 or 400 hours over the course of last year in pro bono services and regularly take clients who cannot fully afford the services of a lawyer. The Military Assistance Panel provides free legal services exclusively to Oregon service members deployed in the armed services and their families. More than 100 lawyers currently volunteer with that panel. They are trained to provide legal assistance relating to service members' Civil Relief Act, and they're able to help with a large number of legal matters. 330 clients, and we're proud of that number, have been served through the panel, but I personally wish we could serve many, many more. We also have some other services and legal information for the public. I already mentioned the website. We have a lawyer referral service for which a person can call up and say, I need a lawyer. I'll use my county, Washington County, on this particular issue. It might be landlord-tenant. And they will receive several names, one or more names, of people who are willing to provide a first meeting for $35. And you can charge nothing or you can charge up to $35, but that's their first and only charge. Often that satisfies their need because really what they want is an explanation of something they think is happening to them and what do they do about it. We also have a modest means program designed to match low-income Oregonians with lawyers to work with them at a reduced fee. In this case, it's $35 to $60. So that's a substantially lower fee than some of the lawyer stories you may have heard. All this is to say that we take very seriously the efforts to provide information and services to the public and to target services for Oregonians who need them the most. The bar is a partner with the Campaign for Equal Justice, which helps collect money. It's separate from the bar, but it helps collect money to support some of the legal services out there and the legal programs themselves, like legal aid. We welcome the opportunity to work with the legislature and the state government to extend the provision of legal services to veterans, active service members, and other Oregonians who need it the most. I will also tell you, because it came in my mail just recently, it's not in my testimony, that we also work hard at training lawyers on how to do work with veterans. So here I have a flyer for Veterans Law representing former service members and their disability claims. So we're training the lawyers, and we're providing the services. And I'm very pleased to be here, and I think it's a great program.
Thank you. Thank you for coming. Appreciate that.
Thank you. Chair Barker and member of the committee, Jerry Gatos. I am president-elect of the Oregon State Bar, and am very proud to have someone just like the general said everything earlier, and who is chair of our public affairs committee, said it all. But I think the important issue for us is that the bar is here for to support both you, but those folks who have really dedicated their lives and family members to this effort in this war. So we'll continue to be supportive of that. Appreciate your efforts and being here on this evening. Thank you.
Thank you. And a special thanks to everybody who showed up tonight at 5 o'clock. It's kind of a tough hour to drive to Salem. We really appreciate that.
Thank you.
Judge Rudy Murgo and the Oregon National Guard Judge Advocate. Or is that what you're saying?
No. Mr. Chairman, committee members, fellow veterans and guests, thank you for allowing me to appear before you today. I want to thank you for all that you've done for Oregon military members and veterans. My remarks today are my own.
And could I ask you to identify yourself for the record, please?
I will. My name is Rudy Murgo. I come before you today as a fellow Oregonian with experience as an Oregon trial judge as well as an Army military trial judge. I'm presently a Plan B Circuit Court Pro Tem judge, and I've been a member of the Oregon State Bar for over three decades. I'm an Oregon National Guard JAG officer. I enlisted in the Army about 37 years ago. Can't seem to get out. And recently was deactivated as an Oregon National Guard member, having spent 18 months assisting Oregon military members, their dependents, and veterans, among other duties. The JAG office, as General Caldwell noted, of the Oregon National Guard provides free to service members and their dependents wills, powers of attorney of various types, transitional assistance, legal assistance, and direction to military members and their dependents. When resources are available, these resources are provided to veterans and their dependents who otherwise must travel to Fort Lewis. The Oregon National Guard recently received federal funds, which, as the general noted, will allow at least temporarily one full-time lawyer whose position will be dedicated to providing legal assistance. Federal law prohibits JAG officers from appearing in state or federal court on behalf of soldiers or their dependents. To fill this need, in 2003, the Oregon State Bar stepped forward and formed the Military Assistance Panel. Their motto is Protecting the Protectors. These volunteers come from across the state and include past presidents of the Oregon State Bar, past service members, and those with the true Oregon volunteer spirit. They are the key to the panel's success. They number more than 100, and some of them don't actually let you know they're on the panel. They just help. Training is provided via the Internet and ABA LAMP programs, as well as providing lawyer-to-lawyer assistance from JAG officers. The Oregon National Guard JAG office acts as a screener to determine if there may be alternative methods, as you've already heard, that won't require a military assistance panel attorney. Over the past few years, these volunteer MAP attorneys have assisted in helping a mother deployed to Afghanistan get her child back from the father who, after a life of non-involvement in the child's life, took the child forcefully from the grandmother and absconded to Texas. MAP attorneys assisted the deployed father of a child here in Salem whose wife was arrested with her amphetamine-dealing boyfriend and whose children were taken by the state of Oregon to the child what used to be the Child Services Division, and that attorney was able to get the child's paternal grandparents to have custody until the service member returned home. MAP attorneys have helped widows of soldiers work through the state probate system to aid the full value of benefits to which they're entitled. They've helped deployed military members with the myriad of landlord, tenant court issues, and consumer loan issues. They've helped family with tax issues. In one case, they saved the family dog of a deployed service member from a well-intentioned but poorly informed about the law city administration who was about to execute the dog. MAP attorneys have helped families of deployed members obtain stays of proceeding in federal and state court, as well as state administrative proceedings where opposing parties and sometimes ill-informed state or local governments misunderstand state and federal SCRA laws. MAP attorneys have assisted one Oregon county in the state finally comply with the law that you passed, allowing property tax for deployed service members. MAP attorneys have done all of this without financial remuneration. Unfortunately, today the greatest need for volunteer MAP attorneys is in the family law area. It is an unfortunate statistic that all of us know that one out of every two of us who marry in Oregon will be divorced. Service members and their family face the same and perhaps worse strain than most of the public at large. There is currently a large unfilled need for service members for legal representation in the family law area. Options you may wish to consider include, from me and not from the government or anybody I'm with, one, considering allowing tax credit for those attorneys who volunteer their time. The second one, and again it's from me, is that you might want to consider requesting that Oregon agencies and local governments have a mandatory education program so that the government also understands the rights and benefits of deployed service members, veterans, and their family under the very laws that you and Congress have passed. The third option you may wish to consider, and again, this is my recommendation and no one else, is to allow the Oregon Attorney General the authority to file class action lawsuits against those in the credit and banking advisory system who systematically deny and delay legal rights that you and Congress have given deployed service members. I think one of the attorneys can talk about that a little later. In closing, as I said, my remarks are my own. I want to thank you very kindly for allowing me to appear before you and for all that you've done for Oregon service members and veterans. Be pleased to answer any questions any of you may have.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Next I have listed here attorneys Jesse Barton, Velda Rogers, and Michael Mendelson. Clients, however you'd like to come up, however it would work for you. And if you just would please identify yourself, you can go in any order you wish for the record.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, thank you, first of all, for letting me appear this afternoon. My name is Velda Rogers. I'm an attorney here in Salem and have been a member of the bar for, at this point, in excess of 25 years. I also spent 20 years in the military, and I have the honor at this point of being the chairman of the military assistance panel. At this point, we have three members of that panel here in this room, including Mr. Barton and Judge Murgo. You've heard a lot of things from other people at this point. What I'd like to tell you about is a specific client that I dealt with. He was married. He was married, and he was a member of the National Guard when he went to Iraq. Prior to going there, he had absolutely no marital problems. He had no addictions. He had no criminal history. He was just John Q. Public. And he was very proud to go and protect, and serve. When he came back, however, he found several interesting things had happened to him. He described to me going to a local mall and looking for snipers. He couldn't just go and look around and see all of the other people and be comfortable. He literally was on guard the entire time that he was there, and he literally described it as scanning the crowd and looking for snipers. Having spent 20 years in the military, that sort of raised my radar a little bit, and I started asking him some other questions, and before too much longer, I didn't have any question whatsoever that he, in fact, had PTSD, and he had a rather severe case of it. But he hadn't been diagnosed. He had not had anybody talk to him. He had absolutely no support system at all. And what had also happened to him since he had come back is that he and his wife started having difficulties. He wasn't the same person that he had been when he left, and she didn't know how to handle that. And so one day when they were having a fight, he wanted to leave, she wanted him to stay, and she tried blocking a door. Bad idea. He wound up with criminal charges. It also turned out that since he had been back, one of the things that he had done to try to resolve some of the issues that he was having, which were a direct result of the time he had spent in Iraq, was to use methamphetamine. We were lucky. We got to him relatively early. We got him evaluated. We got him treated. He is currently in treatment. And once he started getting the treatment for PTSD, the problem with methamphetamine went away. He was also incredibly lucky because he had a wife who truly loved him, and she has stood by him. He was equally lucky because he drew a judge who listened and who thought before he imposed a sentence. And so by the time he was able to walk out of the system, he was actually able to walk out in such a manner as to keep him in the military because he still wants to protect and serve. If you have any questions, I'll be happy to answer them.
I don't. Thank you very much for your assistance to somebody like that who obviously desperately needed it and would be lost without it. And part of my life, I'm served in the military many years ago, but I'm a retired policeman, and so I saw a lot of people who slipped through the cracks who ended up in criminal court because they didn't have help early on. Well, thank you.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I appreciate the opportunity to be here this evening. My name is Jess Barton. I'm an attorney here in Salem. I'm a member of the Military Assistance Panel, served on the panel's advisory committee. One of my MAP clients is here with me today, Kevin Scott, and I wanted to describe his case. It's a smallish case in one sense. I mean, it isn't a case that involves a lot of money or anything really highfalutin, I guess. But it's a case that I think probably is fairly typical of what a MAP attorney might deal with. One of the rights that servicemen have under the Service Members Civil Relief Act is a right to have the interest rates on their consumer credit reduced to 6% during their period of active duty service. So in Mr. Scott's case, he had some credit card, three credit cards, which had interest rates running on them of like 25 to 30%, which is fairly typical these days. But when Mr. Scott was put on active duty, he was on active duty for 77 weeks. Was with the 2nd of the 162nd Infantry out of Corvallis, was deployed to Iraq in 2004. He's an infantryman, saw plenty of action there. His interest rates were to be reduced from these 25 to 30% rates down to 6%. And I should mention that 6% includes any fees that would be assessed. For example, if you got assessed a late fee, that has to be fit under the 6% cap. So it's a real meaningful 6% cap and can make a huge difference in the amount of your consumer debt, what your debt's going to be. In Mr. Scott's case, the total amount ran up to about $3,200. divided among, not equally, but divided among three different credit card companies, was when Mr. Scott was put onto active duty, when he's put onto active duty, he filled out the paperwork and his wife filled out and submitted the paperwork necessary to get these interest rate reductions. Mr. Scott's wife is Andrea. She did everything right, but was basically ignored, particularly by two of the credit card companies. They just didn't do what the law required them to do, despite the fact that Andrea had done everything the law required of her to get the interest rate reductions. When Mr. Scott got home, his case got referred to me as a member of the military assistance panel, and I remember contacting the credit card companies, figuring, well, they'll listen to me. I'm a lawyer, you know. And they didn't listen to me any more than they'd listen to anybody else. They listened to Andrea Scott or Mr. Scott when he tried to make some phone calls. And when you're dealing with the total amount of money at stake of $3,200, you know, the lawyer's thought is, well, you file a lawsuit. Well, it's, you know, you got three different defendants over that small amount of money. It's really cost prohibitive. What I thought to do, and I was glad I thought to do this, was I remembered that I'd read that Congresswoman Hooley had very good constituent services in the way of Veterans Affairs, so I contacted her office. Mr. Scott lives in Yamhill County and I think is in David Wu's district, but then his guard unit was in Darlene Hooley's district, so I thought maybe she could help. And she was a member of the banking committee when she was in that session in Congress and was a member of Veterans Affairs. I thought she'd be just the perfect person to talk to. I spoke with a woman named Suzanne Kuntz, who is on, or I guess is still on, Darlene Hooley's staff. And she said, yeah, we could help. And you send me the stuff. And so I sent her all this information. And then she called me back and she said she'd forward it on to the congressman's D.C. office. They had something called corporate liaison or something like that. And so I said, fine. So apparently all this information got faxed to corporate liaison. And then I'd been making lots of phone calls to these credit card companies trying to get these problems solved. And you're just getting nowhere. I just get passed on from one number to another. And finally the last number I got passed to would be, you know, a dead end. And then after corporate liaison called, I was contacted. A few days later, I got a call from the president's office of Citibank. And you know, all of a sudden, now I'm getting some results. And then things started to fall into place, and finally the interest rates were reduced, and everything worked out. But it required that. It required intervention by a congresswoman's office to get somebody, to get the rights installed for some person that Congress had previously been on the books for however long. And so that's kind of the problem you deal with. And I wonder, the thing I get concerned of is like, okay, things worked out for Mr. Scott, but how many times they don't work out for other people because they don't get hooked up with the right person. And that's really all I wanted to just to mention. It's just sort of I think that's a fairly typical case that a person might deal with as a member of the MAP, dealing with credit card debts, things of that nature. And if the committee members have any questions for me, I'd be happy to answer them if I can.
Well, I want to thank you for your help that you're providing and all to everybody in the bar that does that. I would assume a case like that to take it to court would probably be in the neighborhood of $5,000 just to get started, and so you're $3,230, you know, and those kind of things. So without having a lot of help from the bar, you just wouldn't be able to do it. And it really makes a difference to have, even though you end up having to go to Darlene Hooley's office to get some additional help. But without that, Mr. Scott probably would have had a difficult time just getting around.
That's exactly right, Mr. Chairman.
And so we really appreciate the bar's help on that. Mr. Taylor.
Chairman of the committee, Mr. Barton, chatting with you and General Caldwell earlier, I understand this is not uncommon, that this happens a lot.
Mr. Chairman, yeah, Mr. Taylor, I'm not sure in terms of, you know, how frequent of the cases that get referred off to, for example, MAP members, mm-hmm. how many of those cases are cases involving unfair or illegal interest rates. Mm-hmm. I mean, that, you know, Mr. Yeah. Scott was charging illegal interest rate for some great period of time until finally the things got fixed, and it was all fixed retroactively, so it worked out. But I don't know. You know, it could be that Mr. Scott's deployment was fairly early on in the war, and maybe things have sort of settled down since then. But that's just the thing. We really don't know. I do know that the bar staff keeps some kind of statistics on the types of referrals that are made. So maybe they may have some idea of how many cases that get referred out to MAP members or cases like Mr. Scott's. I'm not sure on that, though.
And we don't know how many cases people just pay.
Pardon me?
We don't know how many cases where the veteran just pays the high rate.
That's right, yeah. Mr. Chairman. There could be just some number of cases where the service member just lives with it. And maybe Mr. Scott would, if you would like to, he would like to address you briefly, I suppose.
Yeah, please.
May be able to answer or provide some information regarding that exact question.
Please.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I want to thank you. My name is Kevin Scott. Give me the opportunity to be here today. Mr. Barton pretty much has summed it all up in a nutshell already. If it wasn't for him and fellow people like him when we come back from deployments, it would probably, a lot of soldiers, service members probably just roll over, pay the money, and not know that those avenues are there. So a big thanks to them. I wasn't aware of any of this while I was deployed. Another note I wanted to make on that was that my wife, she'd contacted JAG and Major Ronnie, and he didn't give her the advice, but said this is the avenue you might want to go down, is that the soldiers that are deployed over there in a combat zone at that point in time, the last thing they would need on their mind is worried about their bills back home. So at first when I came home, I was a little upset that my wife didn't contact me when I talked to her about taking care of this, because maybe I could have helped her out. But on the flip side of that, I can understand too that she thinks I got enough things to worry about over there than worrying about what's going on back here. So thank you. If you have any questions, Mr. Sherman.
And again, I mean, I know I speak for all Oregonians when I say thank you for your service.
Thank you.
We have people come from all over sides on the issue of the war, but I haven't heard anybody that doesn't support the soldiers, and I'm glad to see that this time it was different, you know, 40 years ago, but the country has matured, so. Mr. Taylor.
Right, Mr. Barton, under federal law, are you entitled to attorney's fees if you win the case?
I'm not aware that you, Mr. Chairman, Mr. Taylor, I'm not aware that you are. I know that Michael Mendelson is here. He may be, he has a, I know for sure he has a much broader understanding of the Service Member Civil Relief Act than I have. He may be able to answer that question or have some ideas about going about that, the attorney fee type issue.
Let me add one more question, good Mr. Chairman. Mr. Barton, if you were entitled to attorney's fees, if you prevailed in the matter, would that make the issue a bit easier to deal with in negotiating with the credit card companies?
Mr. Chairman, yeah, Mr. Taylor, I definitely think that would be the case. If I were able to have contacted Citibank, was one of the companies we're dealing with, I guess I could mention, if I'd been able to say to them from very early on, if you don't pay up, if you don't make, you know, you don't reduce the interest rate to the legal limit, we file suit. It's not only going to cost you the lost interest that you're trying to hang on to, apparently, but it's also going to cost you attorney fees. That might just be just the kind of bite in the law or sort of leverage of the law that might have gotten them to have cooperated far earlier on.
So. Thank you.
And General Caldwell just advised us that they're getting at least one a month of this type of issue coming up. So that's, and that's that they know of.
I just wanted to, well, I think you answered my question. I was wondering if they made the back interest available to refund that to your account if it was 18 months or however long you were gone. So that was taken care of.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, Representative Boone, the way they did this, it was like they went back and you just sort of went back to the point in time where the interest rate is supposed to be dropped at the point of, or the date the person's put on active duty. So they're supposed to go back and say, okay, your interest rate's not 25% anymore. As of that date, it's only 6%. Mm-hmm. And then they just totally recalculate the interest rate from that date forward until the person comes off of active duty.
Right.
And so, you know, maybe, for example, the debt might have been, the total debt might have been $5,000, let's say, and then after they do the recalculation, all of a sudden it's only $3,000. Something like that actually could happen, and Mr. Scott's case did happen. So.
And I know they... I know that the credit card companies are able to do a lot with a phone call from just citizen, Joe Citizen. Yeah. I've done that before. I found myself charged a late fee because of the way they did the payment schedule, and I paid every 2 weeks instead of once a month. And so they took the, you know, my pay date was at this level and or at this date, and I'd paid before it, so they waited till 30 days from there, and I got charged a late fee, even though I had paid twice in a month. And not all of them do it. It just depends on the company. But when you call and you say, well, my other card doesn't do it, and I just transferred my balance to them, and I don't care if it's $5 or $5,000, they don't want to lose you. So they'll say, oh, well, we can fix that for you. So I'm glad that they fixed it for you, and I'm glad that, hope that we can maybe find out about that attorney's fees, or if we can't, maybe we can implement that here.
That would certainly be something we would intend to look to next session. Obviously, this is a very abbreviated session this time, and we're past the date where we can introduce any bills. But and we really appreciate your input today. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you.
Mr. Mendelson?
This is such a great committee. There's always good news coming out of it.
Chairman Barker, members of the House Veterans Affairs Committee, my name is Michael B. Mendelson. I'm an attorney in Portland, Oregon. I do federal civil litigation primarily. I'm in private practice. I want to thank you for the opportunity to be here today and to present these issues to you. You've heard the tip of the iceberg. I represented Mr. Jeffrey Linscott. Now, Mr. Linscott has a helicopter company, GL Aviation. In fact, he's an extraordinary pilot. Among other things, he's the guy that flies into Mount St. Helens and sets the sensors down on top of the rock inside the volcano. He flies the game surveys for fish and wildlife and has been up above the Arctic Circle this last summer setting instruments. So he has 13,000 hours, and he trains the FAA inspectors in how to fly that particular helicopter. What you have in front of you is an article from Business Week called Flying Back to Life. It's yellow tabbed. And this is Mr. Linscott. He was Entrepreneur of the Week. And the way that occurred, Mr. Linscott was called to active duty. He was an Air Force major with the Guard. And he was called for retraining when they were trading off the helicopters for the aerial tankers. And so he was called to active duty for a period of 6 months. Now, ordinarily, he's been able to adjust his schedule. His company had two full-time and some part-time pilots, very going business. He was called to active duty. And in the course of that, one of the things that happened is that they got behind in some payments because one of their jet engines that was overhauled for the helicopter wasn't airworthy when it came back. And there was a dispute with him and the Canadian company that did the overhaul. Now, interestingly, the Canadian company also does a lot of service for American helicopters for the Army. But it's a long story. When he came to me, he was going under, and there was just no two ways about it. He was in the process of trying to get a special military assistance loan from the Small Business Administration, but his credit was shot, and he was subject to a lawsuit by the Canadian company. In fact, we made the choice to allow them to take a default judgment, and then when they had a $78,000 default judgment, they were going to come here to enforce it against him. His company was already way down. He'd come off his active duty 6 months and was trying to rebuild the company. Couldn't get a turbine for the helicopter. And without a turbine, a helicopter is just a wasting asset that takes a lot of dollars to maintain insurance and payments. We managed to obtain an injunction against the Canadian company to enforce the judgment in Oregon. We did that in federal court. And the basis for it was that the judgment was tainted with illegal interest, because when they took the default judgment, they had taken interest of about 18% under Canadian law, and because the Service Members Civil Relief Act, which used to be the Soldiers and Sailors Civil Relief Act, prohibits, you know, that kind of interest. And in addition, it says that this is an important national policy of the United States, an important defense policy. And that court looked at that and said, because it's an American policy, even though there was due process, you had an opportunity to go to Canada, you could have litigated in Canada, we recognize their judgments, they recognize ours, Nevertheless, the court said because the judgment is tainted with unlawful interest and all of the surrounding circumstances, we're going to enjoin the enforcement of that judgment, and they're going to have to litigate here whether they properly seized the turbine. In addition, the court found that there was an implied private cause of action under the statute. Now, this is very important because when you look at the Service Members Civil Relief Act, to answer your questions, especially Mr. Taylor, the fact is there are no provisions for recovery of attorney fees. And most of the remedies, and there are many, the Service Members Civil Relief Act is a very comprehensive piece of legislation. It allows for stays, to stay any litigation or proceeding. In fact, it even requires a court to appoint an attorney, but there's no provision for paying that attorney. There is a provision that allows preemptory stays so that a service member can go to court and ask for all of his creditors to hold off because he has been called to active duty. And the reason this is so important, in fact, I haven't heard this, but the reason this is critical is that many of the people being called to active duty have businesses. They're small businesses. They're doctors. They're dentists. They're contractors. They've got equipment. They've purchased all of this equipment. And under the SCRA, by the way, those businesses, if, you know, like their subchapter S corporations, are protected under Section 513, 50 U.S.C. Appendix, Section 513 protects that. The interest rate, Section 527, not only does it just limit the interest to 6%, there was always a dispute under the Soldiers and Sailors Civil Relief Act about whether it was to be forgiven interest or whether it was tacked on at the end of the loan. And the banks were taking the position, well, you know, it's, yeah, we can only do it, you know, we hold it to 6%, but you still owe the money, and we tack it on at the end of the loan once you're off active duty. Well, Congress made it clear when it amended the SCRA to become the SCRA that the interest is forgiven. And so that is a major thing. Problem is, all of these remedies that are contained in that act, and I have it appended here for your information, all of those remedies are illusory. And the reason is this. There's no private cause of action contained in the legislation. There is no recovery of attorney fees. All of these remedies require some action in court. Am I doing something wrong? I hear a beeping. Have I ruined it?
Never heard that.
Well,
that phone is a machine.
But there is no right to damages under the SCRA, so that if a service member needs a remedy, let's say a creditor refuses to reduce the interest, or among the other protections, you cannot seize a service member's property. It used to be just for a storage lien, and they made it clear in the amendments that now it was for anything, if any lien was prohibited while they were on active duty for 90 days thereafter. But all of these remedies require some kind of filing. And what I'm here today, and what Mr. Linscott would be here today to ask you, is that you consider incorporating some of the attorney fees and damages provisions into legislation that would apply to the Service Members Civil Relief Act. I included, for example, some of the attorney fee statutes just under our standard ORS 20.080, which allows attorney fees for contracts and torts when they're torts for less than $5,500. But I also included the Fair Debt Collection Practice Act, 15 U.S.C. 1560-something-K, and also Section 1988 of the Civil Rights Act, 42 U.S.C. Section 1988, which is the fee provision under 1983 Civil Rights Actions. That's the one that provides the civil remedy attorney fees. One of the problems with Oregon's attorney fee provisions under its consumer law, under, you know, its Trade Practices Act, is that it allows recovery of attorney fees to the prevailing party. Now, that means that anybody that goes into court on a consumer action, trade practice action, and loses, owes the other side an enormous amount of money. The only people that can take advantage of it are extraordinarily wealthy with an absolute lock-solid claim, or the people that are judgment-proof if they lose.
and it has been a huge disincentive to people. Now, that same language, the prevailing party, is used, by the way, in federal law under Section 1988 of the Federal Civil Rights Act, 32 U.S.C. 1988. But there, the Supreme Court has interpreted it to mean, under Christianberg Garment, I think is the case, that a prevailing defendant is only entitled to attorney fees if the case was frivolous or not well-founded or factual, so on and so forth. So that protects the civil rights defendants in federal court, even though the statute says prevailing party. Oregon's statute has not been so interpreted. Under the Federal Fair Debt Collection Practices Act, which is in the materials, it does allow recovery by a defendant if, again, the case is frivolous or not well-founded. So what I am here today asking on behalf of all the veterans is that there be some legislation giving them the benefit of the protections that are right now unreachable for them because of the financial requirements. $5,000 to $10,000 to get into court, to make the filings, to protect them, to get the injunctions, to cease all of the violations. And then, even if the violations are remedied, there's no damages. The credit card companies can wreck credit. By the way, there is a provision here that even protects the service member's credit. But to take advantage of it, again, there must be filing, there must be affidavits, and so that is what I'm here to ask this committee to consider. Thank you. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Well, thank you for your service. Again, you know, I recognize that attorney fees are, as they, I mean, you have to pay your bills too, and so they're not unreasonable at all. And my dad always told me, never buy from a rich salesman, never hire a cheap attorney. So it's really important that we have good attorneys handling these cases, competent people, and so we do need, it's obvious, I think we do need to try to make some adjustments here to help that out. Mr. Taylor.
Mr. Chairman of the Committee, Ms. Mendelson, do you and your section from the bar have any suggested language in this area where state law could be changed and amended?
I had considered trying to put something together, but I did not know. For example, there are a lot of factors to go into this. I was thinking of taking some of it from the Fair Debt Collection Practices Act, which is in the material, because it, what is happening is very close to the consumer law Fair Debt Collection Practices. And it provides for attorney fees. It does actually limit certain damages, but it allows up to $1,000 in damages if the court finds that. In fact, it provides it's 15 U.S.C. 1692K, civil liability, and it says that except as otherwise provided in this section, any debt collector who fails to comply with any provision of this title with respect to any person is liable to such person an amount equal to the sum of any actual damage sustained by such person as a result of such failure. In the case of any action by an individual, such additional damages as a court may allow but not exceeding $1,000, or in the case of a class action, any amount which each named plaintiff has could be recovered under subparagraph A2, such amount, so on and so forth, not to exceed $500,000, or 1% of the net worth of the debt collector. And three, in the case of any successful action to enforce liability, the cost of the action, together with a reasonable attorney's fee, is determined by the court. On a finding by the court that an action under this section was brought in bad faith, and for purpose of harassment, the court may award to the defendant attorney fees reasonable in relation to the work expended and costs. So that is, would be very close to something I would recommend to the panel to consider.
One further question. Mr. Mendelson, if I remember correctly, you're a Navy pilot, weren't you?
Well, I did. I went through flight training and carrier qualified on the Intrepid, which is a museum in New York now.
What kind of planes did you fly
in? I flew T-28s and S-2F, Grumman Trackers and T-28s and T-34s.
I fixed planes at about that same time, the old F-8 Crusader.
And that was what I wanted to fly.
Well, then we had even an older one, a Douglas Sky Knight, an F-3D.
Uh-huh.
For electronic counterweight.
The A-3, the Whale.
Yes, Willie the Whale. They didn't allow those in the carrier in my time because they were too old. They were afraid they'd sink the ship landing. So.
Thank you, Chair. For just a moment, Susan Gravy, for the record, Public Affairs Director with the Oregon State Bar. I just wanted to let you know that the Oregon State Bar is more than happy to work with the committee during the interim to develop language that will address some of the concerns that were raised here today. And I know that Mr. Mendelson and others on the panel referenced some ideas that I think we would like to follow up on, and we're happy to work to develop language for you.
We might take a look also with the Judiciary Committee as a possibility to do some of this too, the language change here in Washington. So,
absolutely. We're happy to work with both committees and however you want to do it.
Great. Thank you very much.
Thanks.
Was there anybody else wanting to testify tonight? Well, again, I want to thank everybody for coming in this late evening. As you may or may not know, in this abbreviated session of the legislature, we have a real problem having meeting rooms. And so not only do we have a problem with the meeting rooms, we have to be sure that when this meeting's meeting, committee members aren't due at another meeting somewhere else. And that was pretty, like the Rubik's Cube to get all that to work out. And we only had one case, I think, where somebody had to be at two places at once. Yeah, Wayne Krieger. So, again, thank you very much for coming in. We really appreciate the input on these things. It's very important. And we, obviously, being the Veterans Committee, really want to help our veterans. We know we're going to be sending 3,500 over to the Middle East next year, leaving their, if you figure the single guys that are still have been home, there's probably still going to be 3,000 families of veterans that are going to be here and needing the assistance. And we're going to sure hope we can help you shore that up for them. And thank you again. That meeting's adjourned.